And we're holding on page 72 in Yoma, about four or five lines from the bottom of the page, middle of Ocean Bays. We started learning yesterday about various kinds of cases where a person's life is in danger, and you can be Mechal Shabbos or Mechal most other mitzvahs in order to save their life. We'll talk about soon, Be'ez Hashem, a number of Tanoim and Amoraim deal with the basis for that, where exactly we learn that concept. Anyway, the last one we had was a case where Rabbi Yochanan was suffering from a disease called Safdina. We talked about yesterday, Safdina is often identified as scurvy. Whatever the case, the Gemara is going to point out soon, it can be dangerous. So we said he went to a Goyish lady who was known to have a cure for it and used to make a lot of money for it, and he worms the secret out of her and publicizes it. So the Gemara says, "My Abdalay, what exactly was this cure that she gave him?" Omer of Acha, Breder of Asi, Breder of Ami, Meisor, she used water that sourdough had been soaked in. The shemen zayis and olive oil, umelach and salt. So she mixed that concoction together and she gave it to him. So that's what we learned yesterday, that Rabbi Yochanan had she did it for him Thursday and Friday. Then he said, "What if I need it on Shabbos?" She says, "You won't need it. What if I do? And I won't be able to come because I'm busy teaching my Talmidim." So he wormed the secret out of her. So now Rabbi Acha Breder Rabbi Ami is saying this is the concoction that she used. If indeed Safdina is scurvy, then the shemen zayis contains vitamin C. So then that would be the active ingredient in it. Rabbi Yema says you don't use water in which sourdough has been soaked. Or gufe, use the sourdough itself. Shemen zayis or melach mixed together with olive oil and salt. Rav Ashi Yama mishcha de gadfa de avza. Rav Ashi says you use the oil from the use oil from a feather of a goose. So Rashi points out that the wing of a goose has a little bone on the end of it. So you take the fat from inside that bone and you use that and apply it to the teeth or the area that's suffering from this disease. Page 72 at the bottom. So we're saying, so Rav Ashi is saying, Mishcha de Gadfa de Abza. So Rashi explains there's a little bone at the tip of a goose's wing, and that bone contains fat, or maybe surrounding it. Rashi says, Shuman Moyach Etzim Cotton, the fat of the marrow of the small bones. You have a small bone over there at the end of the wing. You have inside the bone, like most bones, there's marrow, and in that marrow, you have fat. So that fat, then you use that, you apply that to that area. Omer Abaye, but Abaye says, "I'm no abdus lekulu v'lo yitzosoi. I one time was suffering from the Safdina disease, and I tried all these three possibilities that we said so far, v'lo yitzosoi, and I wasn't cured. Ad omer Yahu taya, until an Arab merchant told me the following remedy: Isi kashyosa dezeisa v'le molo tilta. Take kernels from take pits from olives that are not yet one third ripe." The Kalinu Benura, burn those olive pits in fire, Amorachadta, on top of a new spade. So you take a new metal shovel or spade, you make a fire on that, and you burn the kernels in that. But and then take the ashes that result from that, the Advik Bakoche de Dore, and then apply that, stick it to the whole row of teeth where you're suffering that ailment. Avdu Hochi, so Abaya says, "I did that, the Itasoi, and sure enough, I was cured." So we have four different. You take the pits of the olives. You burn them. Amorachadza means on top of a new spade. But Pashtus, the point is, in other words, you want that there shouldn't be anything else mixed in. If you make the fire on the ground or on a used keli or whatever, then you're gonna get some bits of the keli in there as well. You want the pure ashes from the olive pits. So and then you take that and you apply it to the row of teeth. So Abai says, for me, that works. So we have four different possibilities. Mimai havi, what does a person get safdina from in the first place? Michamimi chamimi techiti, when a person eats very, very hot wheat bread, or mishiura kosa de harasina, or where he eats leftover kosa de harasina. Kosa de Harisona is a dish mentioned in many places in Shas. We've come across it before in Ein Yaakov. It was fish fried. It was fish fried with their own fat together with flour. So it was kind of like their equivalent of gefilte fish, sort of, or maybe like their equivalent of breaded fish or something. Whatever the case, when it's left over, then the Gemara is saying it's not good for you. And if you eat, and if a person eats it, then he might get the tzavdina disease. Umay simone, what is the major symptom of it? Rami midi bekocha, if a person puts something between his teeth, but also dummy midi dori, and blood starts coming out from the gums. So on the face of it, it could mean some kind of gum inflammation. But again, as we talked about yesterday, a number of Meforshim and more modern Sfarim and whatever think that it means scurvy, which is nowadays known to be because of a lack of vitamin C. And in fact, in modern Hebrew, they use the word safdina to mean just that. One of the early symptoms of that, one of the first symptoms of scurvy is taka, that a person bleeds from his gums and from various other parts of his body. So whether it's scurvy or whether it's some kind of gum inflammation or whatever, anyway. So Rabbi Yochanan, when he was suffering from tzavdina, obad hachi b'shabsa, he did this remedy on Shabbos, the itzi, and he was cured. So the question is, Rabbi Yochanan hechi obin hochi? How could Rabbi Yochanan do that? Now, Rashi says that actually we shouldn't have that girsa over here. In the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, where the Gemara brings this whole story over there in the context of a sugya about getting healed by a goy. The Gemara discusses over there the concern. Back then, there was a concern that if you go to a goy for a remedy, the goy may deliberately give you something that'll be poisonous or otherwise harmful. So therefore, you shouldn't do it. And the Gemara discusses over there how Rabbi Yochanan could go to this goyish lady to get the cure. Here, Rashi says here, in connection with Hilchos Shabbos, it's not really relevant. Nevertheless, we have the Girsa in front of us, Hefi Ovid Hofi, and according to that, the question would be how he could put the medicine on Shabbos, because on the face of it, Safdina is not such a dangerous disease that you should be allowed to be over even on the Din de Rabbanon to use medicine on Shabbos, let alone if we mean that he was actually doing things d'oraisa, for example, grinding up the olive pits or whatever it is. So how could he do that? And the answer is Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchok, Shaini Tzafdina. Tzafdina is different. It may seem at the beginning to not be particularly dangerous, but it starts out only in the mouth, but eventually, if it's not treated, it spreads to the intestines, and it can be very dangerous. And the Gemara actually there in Avodah Zarah establishes a rule that the general rule is any makashol cholol, any kind of disease or injury or whatever that affects the internal organs of the body is something that you can be machal Shabbos for. So here, this is an example of that even though it seems to just be some kind of gum disease, but eventually it spreads. Again, if it means scurvy, then taka does end up affecting the whole body, because the whole body breaks down because of a lack of vitamin C. If it means some other kind of infection or whatever, then yeah, eventually such things tend to spread as well. Okay. Further on, the Gemara talks about, again, we're talking about various dinim of pikuach nefesh as they relate to Shabbos. The original thing was as far as Yom Kippur, but now we have a more general discussion about being machal Shabbos for pikuach nefesh. So tonen abonon, mefachin pikuach nefesh b'Shabbos. We do things, we work toward to do things of pikuach nefesh on Shabbos. Rashi, by the way, translates, where do we get the word pikuach from? Rashi uses a French word over here to translate, that means to uncover. So to discover or uncover. So the discouvrement, you see. So it's related to the word discover or the word uncover in English. So literally, pikuach nefesh means uncovering what's needed in order to save a person's life. Sometimes it can literally be uncovering. Like, for example, it talks about, we're going to talk about soon, a piece that the Gemara discusses when a building collapses and you partially have to dig up the rubble in order to find people who are trapped underneath it. Sometimes it can be other kinds of situations. You have to figure out, you have to discover what it is that the person is that's putting the person in danger, and figure out how to treat him or how to save him. So therefore, the word for that becomes pikuach nefesh, which literally means discovering how to save his life. Anyway, so mefakhin pikuach nefesh b'Shabbos. So you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. In fact, not only you're allowed to, but hazoris harez meshubach, whoever's quicker to do it is more praiseworthy. The ein sorach little reshus mi beis din, he doesn't even need to get permission from beis din before he acts. It's a matter of pikuach nefesh, you just go and do it. by the time you come, it might be. In fact, the Yerushalmi brings on this, and this is brought the halacha, hanishal harezim guna. If a rav is asked such a question, then it's a gnai, it's a shameful thing for such a rav to even be asked such a question. Why? Because he should be teaching his balabatim to begin with about the importance of pikuach nefesh doicha Shabbos and most things in kol haTorah kula, and therefore it shouldn't even be a situation where in an emergency they need to ask him a shayla. So ha ketzad, what are some examples of that? Ra tinik shenafel layam. Suppose a person sees that a child fell into the sea or into a lake or whatever, Puris Mitsuda or Ma'alehu, then he spreads out a net and brings up the child. Again, whoever is quicker to do that is praiseworthy. He doesn't need to check first with Bastin. And the Gemara points out that means now, even if at the same time he's putting a net into the water, he ends up catching fish. Nevertheless, we don't say he was doing a malacha of tzedah, therefore he shouldn't have done that. No, we say it doesn't matter. Now, there is a machloikas we've shown him about that. What about if he intends to catch fish? What about if he's actually intending to catch fish and then he goes and pulls up a child and then he pulls up a child together with them? So you have a machloikas we've shown him on that. Would he be, he went machatchila for the fish. Because he wanted to be over Shabbos, and then in the end it turned out. Or no, so you have a few different scenarios. You can have where he's going to get the kid, and by accident he catches some fish as well. You can have where he intends to do both. He figures, you know what? As long as I'm catching the kid, I may as well catch some fish as well. And you can even have a case where he intends to catch fish and he pulls up a child together with it, not even realizing that there was a child there. As far as the first two cases, there's no question he's allowed to do it. As far as the middle case, it's machlokas rishonim, whether he's still chayav for breaking Shabbos. The fact is that he did do a malacha. On the other hand, we're saying he was also intending to save the child. So does he have the right to do that? Does he have a right to, while he's pulling up the child, to think, you know what, I'm going to catch some fish as well? Or should he not do that? Well, it depends. We're talking about at the same time. Obviously, if after he pulled out the child, he goes and pulls out the fish. There's no excuse for that. But the Rambam actually goes so far as to say, even if he was intending to go catch fish and he happened to pull up a kid, nevertheless, he'd still be potter, even though his intention, lachatchila, was to actually do a malacha, but because he ended up saving a kid, then therefore he's potter. But not by lachatchila, he'd be allowed to do that. So it's machlokas we're showing him about that point. The Gemara mentions soon the in one of the cases the Gemara is going to bring, the Gemara uses the word michaven, that he has intention to. So there are different girsos, whether you have that word in there or not, that will make a difference. In other words, if he's intending, for example, to catch fish, but he's also intending to save the child, would that be something that he's allowed to do? Or would we tell him that no, you can only have in mind the kid, and if by accident you end up catching fish, then fine, doesn't matter. So it's machlokas we're showing him about that between the Ran and the Rif, among others. Next, ra tinik shenafel labur. Suppose he sees a child falls into a pit, oikir chuya umalehu, that he can uproot a clod of dirt from the edge of the from the edge of the burr. In other words, a burr usually has, there's a rim around the burr. So like this now, what you're doing is you want to make it easier to climb down into the burr and rescue the kid. So you pull up, you start to just, you dig up and take out some of the dirt around the edge of the burr. So you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. And again, the one who does that the faster is praiseworthy. The in sarach little rishus mi based, and he doesn't have to act based in rishus. But afagab to come a second dauga, even if at the same time he's now also making a step. Where now in the future, after Shabbos, it'll be easier to get in and out of the burr because of this change that he made to the lip of it. Nevertheless, he's doing it on Shabbos to save a kid, so therefore he's allowed to do that. And again, you have, according to somebody showing him, even if he's actually intending to make that step, but he's also at the same time saving the child, then it would be mutter as well, according to somebody showing him.
It's not only, it's a nefesh.
The point is, you have to show him who learned that if he's intending to be Masak and Dauga, then maybe he shouldn't do it. Maybe somebody, or at least we would say, b'dieved, fine, he did it. Obviously, he saved a life. Maybe we should tell him to begin with, don't be having in mind to make a step over there. You're pulling out the dirt in order to make it easier to get down in there and get the kid. Don't start thinking, you know what, by the way, I'm going to make a nice step out of it while I'm at it. So somebody showing him learn that way, others learn that not. A third example, Ra Delas Shinina La Bifne Tinik, Ra Shinina La Delas Bifne Tinik, if he sees that a door is locked in front of a child, Shovro Omitsia, then he can break down the door and get the kid out. By the way, Rashi is one of the ones who says Shafilu hu tzarech l'dover. Rashi says even if he needs this thing, even if he needs the actual fish, or even if he needs the actual step into the bor or whatever, he would be entitled to do that. And again, there are Rishonim who don't learn like that. Anyways, Rosh Nina l'delas b'fnei tinek. If he sees a door locked in front of a child, Shoivro mitzia, he can break the door and get the kid out. Again, the one who does it fastest is praiseworthy. He doesn't need permission from Beis Din. And the Gemara interjects. That means, even if we're talking about that he's intending to break the wood, to break the door into useful pieces of wood. Rashi has two explanations. One is that shifi means boards, which then in the future he can use them for some other project after Shabbos. The second possibility is it means little splinters of wood that he can use for making a fire. So if we have the girsa michavin, then it means even if he's having that specifically in mind, he's still allowed to do that. According to the Rishonim, who don't have the girsa michavin, it would mean even though he ends up breaking it in a way that becomes something useful after Shabbos, then it's allowed, but not that he should have that in mind. And a fourth example, mechaber u'mafsikin mipnei dleika b'Shabbos. You can, if there's a fire on Shabbos, and there's danger to life over there. So when there's no danger, we learned back in Masechta Shabbos, you have to just let the fire burn itself out, even if it means the entire house and everything in it is going to burn down. But when there's pekuach nefesh involved, then when there's people who can't be evacuated from the house, or it may spread to other houses where the people there can't be gotten out or whatever, then we're saying over here, you're allowed to put out the fire on Shabbos. Halacha l'maisa is that if your house, say for example, you have a house which is not attached to any other, and a fire breaks out in it on Shabbos, and you can get everybody out of the house, then yes, you have no heter to put the fire out on Shabbos. You've got $1 million in there, okay, b'chol moedecha, like we learned the other day. But if, for example, if you have someone in the house where you can't easily get out, or your house is adjacent to other houses and it's going to spread to them or whatever, then yes, we're talking about over here. Then it's a matter of pekuach nefesh. So then you can put it out or call the fire department or whatever it is. Incidentally, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions an interesting point. Back in the day, where when there was a fire, Goyim could use it as an excuse to loot. I don't know, to a certain extent, maybe that applies nowadays also, I don't know. Then you have a heter to put out a fire, even if there's no specific sakonas nefoshes, because Goyim are going to use it as an excuse to break into the area and start looting, and that can also cause danger to life when people are going to try to stand up against them. So then it mentions in Shulchan Aruch there would be a heter to put out the fire in that case as well. Anyway. The point is, so when you're allowed to, so machabin, you're allowed to put out the fire, or mafsikin, or you're allowed to set up a firewall. For example, Rashi says using metal kalim or earthenware kalim full of water or whatever to make a firewall to prevent the fire from spreading. B'Shabbos mitnav leka because of a fire. B'Shabbos, and the point is, even though the water is going to pour out of the kalim and put out the fire again, because it's a matter of sakonas nefashos. Ba'azori zareizim meshubach. Again, the one who does that faster is praiseworthy. Vein sarach luto rishus mi'beis din. He doesn't need to get permission from beis din. And again, the Gemara interjects. Even if he's doing it in a way where he ends up flattening out the coals, and now after Shabbos he can more easily use those coals to bake or cook something on, you know, to put a pot on, for example, nevertheless it would still be allowed. Again, subject to the machlokas rishonim, is he allowed even l'chatchila to do it in such a way, or is it only a b'dievedik thing that if he did it that way? And the Gemara goes on, it's not here in Ein Yaakov, but the Gemara goes on to discuss why it needs to mention four different cases. One interesting one the Gemara mentions is if a kid is behind a locked door, you might think that maybe what you can do, the Gemara says, is so you stay on the other, you don't break down the door on Shabbos. Maybe what you do is you stay on the other side of the door until you can find the key, or until after Shabbos or whatever it is, and you amuse the kid from the other side of the door. You play with nuts, as the Gemara says, or you do other things to keep the kid distracted. We don't say that. We say go break down the door, because the tinek might be so scared that he might die from fright. Further on, the Gemara talks about the dinim, about what happens if a building collapses on Shabbos, and that you have to, or on Yom Kippur, or any other, whatever. So again, you have to go dig through the rubble and be mechalal Shabbos and do whatever you can in order to save people's lives who are buried there. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, ad heichan hu boydeh. Up to what point, when you find a person buried there in the rubble, how far do you have to check on his body to see whether he's alive? Meaning, Rashi says, you find a person who's been knocked out, he's in a coma or whatever, you can't tell whether he's alive or dead. Where do you check to see whether he's in fact alive or dead? So ad chotmoy, you check until his nose. If you don't detect any breath coming from his nose, then you know that he's dead. Some say you check until his heart to see if he has a heartbeat. Continues the Braisa. And what happens if you're digging through and check and searching for bodies and you find the people up in the high in the upper levels of the rubble are dead? Lo yoyma, you shouldn't say at that point, you know what, the ones who are further down in the rubble are for sure dead. I may as well not bother anymore. Or if it's on Shabbos, I'm not allowed to bother anymore. Nope. In fact, it's happened. It sometimes happened that people in the higher levels were dead and the ones who were buried further down were alive. So you have to keep on looking until, as long as you have reason to think anybody's alive in there. In principle, by the way, the Mishnah and the Gemara discuss there's a difference whether there are Jews or Goyim trapped in there. In practice, you don't always have that distinction nowadays because there's a whole matter of Eva. If you're going to go and do pikuach nefesh only for Jews and not for goyim in such a situation, it'll cause an enormous amount of anti-Semitism. So therefore, there's poskim are generally say that you should go ahead under the circumstances and do it for them as well. There are cases where goyim call atzala, yeah, and Rav Moshe Feinstein and other poskim have talked about such cases, yeah. One thing is, the Gemara mentions in Masechta Avodah Zarah, you have, for example, let's say when it comes to, it talks about the dinim over there of a midwife going to help a woman in labor, where the Gemara says over there, we're able to give an excuse to the goyim that say, we're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos only for people who keep Shabbos, but since you don't keep Shabbos, then we don't have a heter for that. But again, Rav Moshe and other Gedolei Yisrael talk about nowadays, nobody's going to accept such an idea. Idea and will cause tremendous Ava, so therefore, yeah. Okay.
Especially today with the
WhatsApp. All the more so now with social media and all that. It's true, yeah. Yeah, it's true. There was a couple of decades ago, there was a Yid who put out all kinds of, unfortunately, he was one of the Maharsayich Machrivayich. He put out books and articles and whatever, claiming all kinds of false things against Jews. And one of them he claimed was that one time there was a case of Pikuach Nefesh where they deliberately said, no, leave the goy alone and let him die. And then they actually demonstrated, and he was finally forced to admit that he had made up the whole story. So, yeah. So the Gemara says, now, we just said there's machloikas where you check on the body to see if the person is alive. We said, do you check for breath from the nose or do you check for a heart? So the Gemara says, lema hani tanoi ki hani tanoi. Should we have to say that the machloikas tanoim of the Tanur Rabbanan versus the Tanakama versus the Yesh Oimrim is the same as the following machloikas tanoim? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Meheichan HaVlad Noitzer. From what part of the body does a baby first started getting formed? A baby develops in the womb. What part of the body develops first? So Meiroshoi, so the Tanakama of that Braisa says, the head develops first. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Mim'e'imi ata goizi. David says about Hashem, you Hashem, goizi me from my mother's womb. Now, in the simple sense, goizi means you pulled me out, and that's how the Mefarshim on the pasuk explain it. However, the Gemara over here is darshining va'oimer gozi nizrich v'ashlichi. We find another pasuk that uses almost the same word gozi. The Navi tells the Jewish people, cut off your crown of hair and throw it away. In other words, show that you're praving avelos for the golos and the churban. So therefore, we see the word gozi is related to hair on the head. So we understand. Mimeimata gozi means you Hashem in my mother's womb. You first created my head. So the Tanakhama says that's the head is what's created first. Abashol says that no, the navel, the middle of the body, is created first. And then it sends out roots in all directions, and then the rest of the body develops from that. The point is, the Gemara is assuming the Tanakama of the previous Braisa, who says that person's main chayos is in his breath from his nose. So he would say, therefore, the main chayos of a baby forming in the womb must be the head, which contains the nose first. That's true, the baby doesn't breathe in the womb, but nevertheless, the point is that Tana would be saying that the head is the seat of the main chayus of the body, whereas the Yesh Omim that said that you check for a heartbeat would follow Abashol, who says that the baby is formed from its midsection. Tiburo literally means its navel, but it means that general, the midsection of the body. So is it the same machlokas? The Gemara says not necessarily. Afilu tema abashol. You could even say that the Tanakama of the previous Braisa would be like abashol. Ad kana ka'omer abashol hasim elol inyan tzira. You know, abashol is only talking about when the baby is formed inside the womb. And then he says first the middle of it. The kol midi mitziyase mitzar. In general, whenever you have something formed, you start from the middle and then you work your way outwards. We had earlier in the Masechta, we had something about that when the Gemara was discussing how the world was formed. And we had a couple of different opinions over there. One is that Hashem formed the middle of the world first. Olamem tziyase nivra, that Hashem first created the middle of the world and then worked outward from there. So in general, when you create something, you're usually going to start from the middle and then work your way outward. So therefore, Abishol says, so it is also with the body inside the womb. Aval inin pekuach nefesh, but when it comes to figuring out whether a person is alive or not and saving his life, afilo Abishol moida, even Abishol would agree to ikka chayusa ba'apehu, that the main place of life in the body is in the nose, dichtiv kol hashem nishmas ruach chayim ba'apav. Because the pasuk described by the Mabul, anything that had the breath of life in its nostrils was killed in the Mabul. So we see that the nishmas ruach chaim. How do you define whether a creature is alive or not? Is by whether it has breath, whether it's still breathing. The whole machloikas, even the opinion that says ad liboy would only be talking about if you're going from the bottom to up. So let's say, for example, you found first the feet of somebody buried under the rubble, and then you're working your way up the body to see whether he's alive or not. So eventually you reach his heart. So then the Tanakhama says that's not enough. Don't even bother checking for a heartbeat. The important thing is to check the nose. Whereas the Yeshayim will say check the heart, and if you don't find a heartbeat, then you know the guy's dead. Avol mimayu lamata, but says Rav Papa, if you find his head first, kiven de bodek le'ad choytmai, then everybody would agree, once you've gotten to the nose and you don't find that he's breathing, shuvein yitzarech, then you don't need to check any further. Dichtiv kol hashem nishmas ruach chayim ba'apav, as the Pasuk says, the Pasuk we just quoted about the Mabul, any creature that has the breath of life in its nostrils. So even the Yeshayim would agree to that. The Yeshayim are only saying, if you found the heart first, then is it enough to see that it doesn't have a heart? Now, it comes out, l'maskana, from this, it comes out that the main criteria in halacha of whether a person is alive or dead is whether they're breathing. Nowadays, you have the enormous discussion about brain death and all of that, which bears on this. In Goyish law, l'havdol, they often consider that brain death is enough, that at that point, the person's considered dead legally, and therefore they can harvest their organs and whatnot. Here we're saying that in halacha, it depends on whether they've stopped breathing, and so there's an enormous amount of discussion about that. There's also a lot of discussion. What about there might be, you can't tell there's a heartbeat, but you hook up an EKG machine or whatever, and you'll still detect a heartbeat. Is that enough to still consider then that the person is alive? Or maybe at that point, since you can't detect a heartbeat anymore, maybe then the person is not considered alive anymore. There's a couple of tshuvas from Rav Moshe on the subject. There's a lot from the Tzitz Eliezer on the subject. There's a lot of poskim of the last 50 or 70 years have dealt with various angles on all of this.
The Gemara
in Soita mentions about when it says by the Egla Rufa what part of the body they measure from to find the closest city. Yeah, the Gemara mentions the same machlokas about what point a baby is formed from. And again, the Gemara says there, maybe not necessarily does that relate to that machlokas, because then they're learning from what it says by the Psukim, by the Egla Rufa, where it says cholol, where do we consider that the person, where do we consider that the cessation of life comes from? Where is he considered a cholol, depending on his head or his heart or whatever. Now, so let's get into the general discussion where we know the whole concept that pikuach nefesh doich kol haTorah kula. So the Gemara says, "Kvar hoyer Rabbi Shmuel v'Rabbi Akiva v'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah mahalchin baderech." These three chachamim were one time walking on the road. The Levi hasader v'Rabbi Shmuel b'noish Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah mahalchin achareihim. You had to, behind them were walking Levi Hasader and Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Why is Levi Hasader called that? Rashi says, I don't know. Eitz Yosef brings an explanation from the Oruch that says that one explanation is, it's not Hasader, first a Dalad, then a Resh, but rather Hasarud, which means that he was making, so now the word Srud can either mean big day, like you have big day Srud, the clothes of the Kohenim that we talked about earlier in the Masechta, in which case it would mean that he made official uniforms, or it could mean that the word set, the word big day surah, Rashi explains on Chumash, can also mean clothing that's made like network, that's made of a loose weave. So it would mean he's making things, for example, like nets or things like that. So that's another explanation of why he's called Levi Hasader. Another explanation that's brought is maybe it does mean Hasader, like we have it over here, Moloshin Seder, because he was an expert at arranging brises. Whatever the case, so he and Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, are walking behind the elder Chacham. Either Rashi didn't like these explanations, or he didn't know of them. He just says Loi Poda Shlimahu. It wasn't explained to me why he was called Levi Hasader. We do find here and there that Rashi does quote the Aruch, but so maybe over here, yeah, maybe he didn't like the Aruch's explanation because maybe he figured, look, you know, that requires switching around the Resh and the Dalet, and he didn't, I don't know. Anyway, so, Nishala Shela Zulefneim, the following question was asked, these Chachamim, Minayim L'Pikuach Nefesh Shedoichas HaShabbos. How do we know this concept of Pikuach Nefesh is Doichas HaShabbos and most other mitzvahs in the Torah? So the first one to speak was Rabbi Shmuel. He said, consider the case like this in the Pasuk. The Pasuk says in Parshas Mishpatim, if you find a ganav in a tunnel where he's trying to break into a house, the hook of a mess, and he strike him and kill him, then the Pasuk says, then the balabas is not guilty of killing him because the guy is considered a roid. So Rabbi Shmuel says, "Umazesh sofak al moment ba sofak al nefashis ba." Now consider this: Baba Machteres. He's not necessarily coming to kill. He may only be coming in order to steal moment. And if you stand up against him, he will run away. And we know how serious shvichus damim is, or shvichus damim etame esaretz for gorim l'shkinish shistalik miyisrael. And yet. Killing, and we know how serious killing a yid is. It causes Eretz Yisrael to become tamei, and it causes the Shechina to leave the Jewish people, as it talks about in Parshas Maaseh. Nevertheless, nitan latzili v'nafshei. Nevertheless, you're allowed to save the balabas from this attacker, from this ganav, even by killing him if necessary. Or latziloi can also mean, for that matter, to save the ganav from the potential aveda that he's going to do. Anyway, kavachomer. So Rabbi Shmuel says a kavachomer of kuach nefesh should doichas Shabbos. How much more so? Kuach nefesh would be doichas Shabbos. Because if it's doichas ritzicha, which is a much more serious iser, how much more so it's doichas Shabbos? Nene Rabbi Akiva v'omer. Then Rabbi Akiva started speaking, and he said, "You have another pasuk from Parshas Mishpatim. V'chi yozid isha re'eho goyim." The pasuk describes if a person deliberately goes and stands up against somebody else and kills him. So the pasuk is mi'im mizbechi tekochenu lamus. You take him even from the mizbeach to kill him, which means that even, for example, like you find in Malachim, where Yoav grabbed onto the corners of the Mizbeach to save himself, nevertheless, the Ritzeach b'mezid, it doesn't save him, and you take him from there and execute him. Now, we learn me'im mizbechi, it only means when he's next to the Mizbeach, like holding on to the horns, like Yoav did, v'loy me'al mizbechi, not when he's on the Mizbeach, meaning, in other words, so Rashi says, it means also a koyin. If the koyin has not yet started, if a koyin killed somebody and he has not yet started to do the avoida, he's in the azorah, but he hasn't yet started to do the avoida, then we take him from there and we bring him to Beis Din to have him executed. V'loy me'al mizbechi, but if he already began an avoida, we don't interrupt it, we let him finish the avoida, and then we bring him to Beis Din. Now that exception that you don't take him from the middle of the avoda, that would only apply when it's coming to execute. But if you want to take him away from the avoda to help save somebody's life, meaning you have at the same time, while this koyin is doing the avoda on the mizbeach, somebody else is being judged and based in for something which he would be chayav misa for, and they find out that this koyin knows edus that could save the guy. So then they actually make him interrupt his avoda in order to come to Beis Din to testify. So afilo me'al mizbechi, then we take him even from on the mizbeach, we go over to this koyin and we tell him, please interrupt your avoda because we need you right away in Beis Din to go testify on this guy's behalf. So now Rabbi Akiva says, umazen, now consider a kavachomer. In that case, shesofik yesh mamash midvorav, sofik ein mamash midvorav. It's a sofik whether what he's going to say is even going to amount to anything. He's going to come to say something to Beis Din. Is it going to be something that's taka going to get the guy exonerated? Maybe, maybe not. Beis Din has to hear him out. Va'avoda chamura doicha Shabbos. And avoda is such a serious thing that we see that it's doicha Shabbos. You do the avoda in the Bais Mikdash, even on Shabbos, even though it involves many malachas. Kavachoymel, pekuach nefesh, doicha Shabbos. So if we see, says Rabbi Akiva, that pekuach nefesh is doicha Shabbos, there's doicha avoda, how much more so it's doicha Shabbos?
The coin is the
aid in that case, yeah. Nen Rabbi Lozav Amar, Rabbi Lozav and Azariah spoke up and said, here is another proof. Consider Mila, which involves only one of a person's 248 parts, Doiches Shabbos, and yet you do the Mila on Shabbos. How much more so when it comes to saving a person's entire guf? Because now, why is Mila Doicha Shabbos? Rashi points out, because after all, it involves Kores. If a person doesn't have Bris Mila, eventually he's going to get Kores for it. And so we see that even Mila is Doicha Shabbos, how much more so saving the whole person's body. Rabbi Nachmanel actually has an interesting explanation of this, which ties in with something in this week's parasha. We know we have in this week's parasha, we have a story where Moshe and his family are on the way to Mitzrayim for him to start the job of talking to Paray. And on the way, they're staying over in an inn, right? Baderach Mamola, and by Gesheu Hashem, by Vakash Amisoi, and Hashem was ready. Hashem sent a malach who attacked him and was ready to kill him until Tzipora made a bris for the baby. So we usually understand that it means that the malach was attacking Moshe Rabbeinu. That's how Rashi learns it on the pasuk. However, there are Mephoshim who learn that it means the malach was going to attack the baby. And only once Tzipora made a bris for the baby, then the malach left him alone. So in that case, Rabbi Nachmanel says, that's what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah means over here. Mila puts the baby in danger because it could end up like the situation with Moshe. And we're saying it's Doicha Shabbos, how much more so to save the person's entire life is Doicha Shabbos. Next, Rabbi Yossi ben Yehuda Omer, here's another way of learning. The Pasuk says, Es Shabbosai Satishmoru. The Pasuk says, you should keep my Shabbosim. Yochol Lakol, you would think that means across the board, you always have to keep Shabbos no matter what. Tamad Lema Ach. No, because the pasuk says ach es shabbosai tishmoru. The word ach cholak divides things and means there's exceptions to the rule. And the exception is pekorach nefesh. Rashi on the pasuk by then, Rashi actually on a Gemara in Psachim where it also mentions ach in connection with ach by Yemarishin. Rashi mentions over there's a system, one of the systems of exchanging letters for another that we find the same way as you have achbash and you have other ones. One of the ones is called Achas Bata, where you divide the Aleph Beis into groups of seven letters each. And when you do like that, you come out Aleph interchanges with Ches, and Chof interchanges with Tzadik, and therefore the word Ach becomes the word Chetz, Ches Tzadik, as in the word Chatzi, a half. So there we learn from that it means that only half the day is also on Erev Pesach is also to eat chametz. So the same way over here, only half, like a certain fraction of the time, do you have to keep Shabbos, and the other half, the other fraction, is your Mechalel Shabbos when there's Pekorach Nefesh.
Based on pronunciation?
Not based on pronunciation. It's based on dividing the Aleph Beis into three groups of seven letters each, the same way as Atbash.
How do they do it? How do they...
What do you mean? How do they do it?
You
exactly that. You take, for example, the Aleph, the Ches, and the Samach are all in one row. The Beis, Tes, and Ayin are all in one row, etc. It's a way of interchanging letters, like Atbash and like some of the others. Okay, another one, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yonasan ben Yosef Omer. The pasuk says, Ki kodesh hi lochem. The pasuk says, Shabbos is holy to you. That means lochem means for you. It's for your use. Meaning, he mesura hi biyedchem. The Shabbos is given over to you. The Shabbos is, so to speak, secondary to you. V'loy atem mesura miyada. You are not given over to Shabbos. In other words, that when there's pekorach nefesh involved, then your life overrides Shabbos. Rav Shimon Menasio, another one, the pasuk is v'shomru bnei Yisrael also Shabbos. The Jewish people should observe Shabbos. That means Omra Torah, the Torah is telling us, chal al over, all of Shabbos achas, kidei sheyishmer Shabbos is harbi. Violate one Shabbos for his sake, so that in the future he'll be able to keep many more Shabbosim. Now, a couple of Mephoshim point out one interesting nafkamina between what Rav Shimon Menasseh is saying and all the previous explanations. According to him, there would not be a heter to be Mechalel Shabbos where the person is going to die shortly afterwards anyway. So it's only you're doing it in order to enable him to keep a future Shabbos, but if he's anyway not going to be enabled to keep a future Shabbos, then Rav Shimon Menasseh's reason wouldn't allow it. The halacha is not like that, though. The halacha is that we base ourselves on any of the various other reasons the Gemara is mentioning over here, and therefore the Gemara explains even for Chaye Shah, even the guy's only going to live for a short amount of time afterwards, nevertheless, you're Mechal Shabbos for him. And the Gemara points out, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, I havoi hosim, if I had been there when these Tanoim were discussing this, have amina didi adifa medidhu, I would have told them, I have a better limud, better than all of theirs. The pasuk says, v'chai b'hem, that Hashem gave us the mitzvahs, that we should live with them, meaning we should live with l'shiyamos b'hem, not that we should die through them. So therefore, that includes Shabbos. So, okay, so we'll continue next time, as the Shem, and discuss the. I don't think we're going to have the time, but we'll leave it till next time, yeah. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Gimel Tevis. We have the concept that the Alter Rebbe brings in Torah Ur, that Shemona Esrei nowadays. We dive in it quietly, but that's only nowadays because Nukva, the Nekeva, which is represented by Shemona Esrei, which is where the person is davening, is only a Makabel, not a Mashpia. La'asid Lover, the Nukva will be raised up and itself become a Mashpia, just like the Makabel. So then Shemona Esrei will be loud, and then you'll have what it describes in the Pasuk Kol Kala. The Alter Rebbe mentions this in Parshas Vayigash. So on the face of it, the Rebbe says, Tzarechiyun, according to Pnimiyas HaTorah, the point of Tefillah B'Lachash is because of the that's the definition of Tefillah, because the Bittul B'Mitzios to Hashem. So, and that's the true meaning of what Shemona Esrei is, Kineged Olam Atzilus. So how could it be that La'asid Lover, it's going to be out loud, which is the opposite of Bittul? So now the next part is actually the next day's installment, but since we don't have the shiur tomorrow, so we'll finish up. The answer is that Eber says, because La'asid Lover, when we're gonna have the ultimate level of bittul to the point of a nigla kvod avayv or kabasa yachdav, that the flesh itself will seal a course. That means the whole mitzius will have revealed in it that einoid, there is no mitzius. By us, there's gonna be revealed the concept of Yisrael, the Kutchabrich of Kulachad. That means our own mitzius is gonna be atzmus. Like we have even now, we have the concept man malchi rabbanon, that the mitzios of Talmud Chachamim themselves is the king. So now we're going to be able to have the bittul, the tachlos of tefillah, and then we're going to have that advantage of bittul is going to be revealed, and we're going to be able to daven out loud, and that will demonstrate the highest level of bittul. Halachas of kiddush, the cup for kid. Yesterday we talked about the details of the wine. The cup itself has to be whole, not cracked. It has to be clean. You have various dinim that apply to the kosher bracha of Birkas HaMazon. It has to be not cracked. It has to be clean, washed on the inside and outside, full, etc. All of those apply to Kiddush as well, both by day and by night, as well as Abdullah. It's good to make Kiddush by night on a big cup where you'll leave some of the wine over for day Kiddush and for Abdullah. I don't know anybody who does that, but there is that concept. Okay.